We're talking about eviction notices here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers' statewide ban on evictions expired more than 6 weeks ago, leaving vulnerable renters at risk of losing housing during the pandemic that has left more than a million Wisconsinites out of work. According to the data and analytics firm Amherst, roughly 28 million renter households nationwide are estimated to be at greatest risk of eviction. Are you worried about losing your home? Have you talked with your landlord or bank? What do they tell you? We're at 800-642-1234. Christine Donahoe is a supervising attorney and the Housing Priority Coordinator for Legal Action of Wisconsin, which provides free legal help to low-income individuals. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
What have you seen since the ban on evictions was lifted on May 26th?
Well, we've seen those callers come in through our intake line saying that they can't pay rent, they don't know what to do, and they're facing eviction. And we're seeing more calls than this time last year, for sure.
What do you tell them?
Well, we try to get as much information as we can, give quick advice to those people who we can help, and then through just simple advice on the phone. And for those who have more complicated facts or who are later in the stage of eviction, we try to see whether we can represent them in court.
What is the first step for that renter who knows that they can't pay their rent? What should they do first?
Well, if they can't pay their rent, they should certainly reach out to find out about some rental assistance programs, because Governor Evers has allocated $25 million for the Wisconsin Rental Assistance Program. And that's to help various, renters who can't pay their rent due to a loss of income. And then there are other funds, depending on where you are in the state. The county of Milwaukee, where I am, has $7 million for renters. And so we've seen that local agencies and municipalities have tried to set aside funds for renters who are in this tough spot. So I would say the first step is to try to find out what resources are out there to get, coverage for your rent. And then if there's no option for you, or if it's a little too late in the game, then reach out for legal help.
Milwaukee, this is pretty acute, because is it about half of Milwaukee County has renters?
I would believe that. I don't know that statistic, but I think it's a much higher percentage of renters in Milwaukee than in other counties.
How does the backlog of unemployment claims that haven't been processed, how is that affecting these eviction actions?
Well, that's having a huge effect. I mean, the number one reason that people are evicted is for non-payment of rent. That's probably about 90% of the eviction cases. And so when we see people lose their jobs to no fault of their own, they're not going to be able to pay rent, and they're going to end up in eviction court. I just talked with a client this week whose wife lost her job because of the pandemic. She was a nail tech, and her salon was closed, because of the safer at home order and the pandemic. And this client and his wife are Vietnamese speaking. They don't speak or read English. And they have not been able to get through to file unemployment on the phone. So I understand that there are translators available, but he cannot get through on the phone. They want everybody to apply online, and he can't read English. So he's in an especially tough spot, and it's hard for anybody to apply for unemployment right now. And even when they do apply, there's this big backlog. But we see special challenges for people who don't speak English or maybe don't have technology or aren't tech savvy to apply online. So unemployment is directly related to these eviction cases.
Are immigrant communities especially affected by eviction actions?
Absolutely. Immigrant and non-English speaking communities are at very high risk simply because they have less information and access to resources. There's just not a lot of information that's available in all the languages that we need it to be. And, it's great that if you want to call in and apply for unemployment, that there are translators, but there's no easy way to translate these websites. And then there's just a lot of information that flows through word of mouth. And so, people who might, are in immigrant communities or non-English speaking communities might not hear about these resources simply because they might be more isolated from a lot of this information.
We're talking with Chris Donahoe, who is a supervising attorney and the housing coordinator for Legal Action of Wisconsin. We're talking about evictions as the pandemic triggered an economic recession. And your situation, are you facing eviction as a result of the crisis? What is your story? What are your questions about what happens next? It's possible there will be a second round of federal stimulus checks. Would a stimulus check help your situation now? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chris, did Governor Evers' moratorium on evictions, did that contribute to a backlog perhaps, or why we're seeing a spike now compared year over year?
The spike is due to the loss of income of so many families. The eviction moratorium only helped stabilize those families and gave them time to work things out with their landlord, gave them time to receive their stimulus check, and for many of them to receive their unemployment benefits. So my guess would be that no, the moratorium didn't create the spike. The spike would have been there in March if there had been no moratorium, simply because that's when folks started losing their income.
What are landlords saying in this situation? Are they negotiating with their tenants right now?
Some are and some aren't. So I think that a lot of landlords realize that if they evict their renters right now, they'll probably never see a dime of that back rent that's owed. And so they realize it's in their benefit to wait and see if this renter can get some financial assistance, or wait to see if that unemployment check or that stimulus check comes through. And if they wait and work with their tenant and be patient, they're more likely to get that lost rent. But we're also hearing from tenants who were eligible for this state rental assistance and landlords who refused to accept it and wanted to proceed with the eviction. You know, unfortunately, landlords often will wait for rent to be missed as a way to get a tenant out. So maybe they just don't like the tenant, or maybe there have been other problems, but they don't want to deal with a messy fight in eviction court. So they just wait till rent is missed. And that's a very clear-cut eviction case. You missed rent, you're out. And there's no messy fight. And so I think that this is going, you know, unfortunately, and I'm not saying this is the majority of landlords by any means, but I think that there are some situations where tenants are more vulnerable because they don't have a good relationship with their landlord. And that, you know, this is going to be the opportunity where the landlord says, you're out. I'm not going to mess with this.
How important is that communication between the tenant and landlord?
It's critical. You know, we as lawyers get involved when things have already broken down to the point where the landlord and tenant aren't working well together. Maybe they're already in court or about to go to court. But if the tenant and landlord can work things out and get on the same page before that, they're going to be in a much better position. Because once a case is filed in court, that filing is on your record. Even if you work things out later, and even if the landlord is wrong and that case is dismissed, there will still be a record that an eviction was filed against you, and that's going to hurt you. So if you can try to work things out ahead of time and avoid any court filing, you're going to be in a much better position. And your landlord's going to be more relaxed as well, because they will not have spent the time and money and effort to file that eviction.
We are looking at the spike in evictions and the tenant-landlord relationship amid COVID with Chris Donahoe. She's an attorney focused on housing with Legal Action of Wisconsin. Have you seen a wave of tenants moving out of your neighborhood? Do you know the circumstances? Are you worried you may get so far behind on rent that your landlord will evict? What questions do you have about tenant rights? Be part of this 800-642-1234 email ideas at WPR. Back in a minute with Chris Donahoe right here on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Evictions are a concern statewide, but the problem is particularly acute in Milwaukee, where renters make up about half the households in the county. Renters are especially vulnerable to economic shocks because median income is dramatically lower than that of homeowners with a mortgage. Renters also spend a higher share of their income on housing costs than homeowners. How stable is your housing situation? Are you working with your landlord or lender to stay in your home? Do you have a plan? And is it fair? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234. Attorney Chris Donahoe is with Legal Action of Wisconsin. She stays with us. Let's take a call now. Mark is joining us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
All right. What is your question?
Well, my question is, I'm a landlord. I have a couple of properties, and I have a tenant in particular that has lost their job. And I was wondering how easy it is for me as a landlord to apply for these for this financial aid on behalf of my tenant, because perhaps they may be too proud to want to ask for help, or maybe they just don't understand the process, or maybe they're just frustrated with the process. And so as a landlord, can I apply for some of these financial incentives to help on my tenant?
On behalf of your tenant, Chris?
You know, I have never heard of a landlord being able to do that, but this is a new program and it's possible. It just hasn't come up because I haven't been asked by a landlord before. But I don't think so. I would be surprised. I think that you need to work with your tenant and ask them to apply. And my guess would be that if they've already lost their job and they're behind in rent, that pride is not going to be the issue. If they need and want stable housing, they're going to be flexible and willing to apply for this rental assistance.
And what is the name of this rental assistance program?
The Wisconsin Rental Assistance Program, so WRAP, and it is administered through the local county agencies, and it depends on where you are, but the community action programs.
Mark, thank you for the call. Let's bring in Nancy joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I'm wondering if this present situation is going to bring about any changes in the discriminatory rules. I have a very large empty apartment. I own this duplex, and I haven't rented the upstairs apartment for over 20 years, but now I need the money, and I would like to do something about the renting. But I also have I'm 88 years old, and I have a need to have help around my house and especially the yard. But discriminatory rules have said to me in the past that at least I've been led to believe them, that I could never put an ad in the paper stating tenant must remove snow and must help with lawn care. I've never been allowed to do that, which is the reason I haven't rented the apartment. But now, you know, this would be a good opportunity for me and for a tenant. Is this going to bring about changes in these laws that allow me to specify the kind of tenant that I want?
Nancy, I want Chris to respond on that point.
Yeah, Nancy, you know, this isn't something that's come up with me before, but I could definitely see how if you place an ad like that, it could be considered to say essentially somebody in a wheelchair is not welcome to live here. You're saying, you know, this person needs to be able-bodied and able to shovel snow. So I could understand why it's possible somebody has told you that would be discriminatory, though, you know, I haven't researched this or this hasn't come up before, and I can't give you any specific advice in your situation. So I think that it's important to note that, you know, we can't discriminate in housing and if, you know, so I'm not sure how you could work that out.
Nancy, thank you. We're checking in on the housing situation and rising evictions during the pandemic. Chris Donahoe is a supervising attorney for Legal Action of Wisconsin, taking your questions around evictions and landlord-tenant relationships at 800-642-1234. Chris, the pandemic has affected the way the justice system does business, and court hearings are now often virtual. How has that impacted how clients go through this process?
The courts have tried earnestly to adapt and keep things moving. And I applaud their efforts. They don't want everything to stand still. They want justice to be served. And it's great. in some situations that we can have these hearings remotely. However, there is a huge problem to a lot of our clients when the courts say you can't appear in person, you have to appear by Zoom. You know, for example, somebody may not have access to technology. They may not know how to use Zoom. They may not have reliable internet. And so when we say that we're going to have due process, but it's only going to come by Zoom hearing and there's no other way, that's causing some problems. For example, we heard from a client last week who got notice of an eviction hearing, but didn't know how to access the hearing by Zoom. I think that either the notice didn't have the information on it or it was forthcoming. He called the courthouse to figure out how to appear, and they said, we'll get back to you. They didn't get back to him, and the next thing he knew, he had a notice from the sheriff's department that they were coming out. Apparently, he had missed the hearing, but he never got information. So if we have reliable information that's actually getting to tenants, and they have access to the internet, to computers, this could work. But we need to be able to accommodate and realize that we're not all in the same situation when it comes to our ability to access, you know, virtual hearings.
We often hear the term tenant rights and the rights of the tenant. What are those most important basic rights?
Well, when it comes to eviction, it's very important for tenants to know that landlords cannot change the locks and lock them out. In Wisconsin, landlords have to go through the formal process through court in order to remove anybody, and only a sheriff can come out and actually remove somebody in their property and lock them out. So that's the most important thing to know. You have a right to notice in writing from a landlord. You have a right to go to court and to state your case and any reasons you think you shouldn't be evicted. And only the sheriff has the right to remove you.
How costly is the eviction process for both tenant and landlord?
To file an eviction, it is somewhere around maybe $250. That's to initiate the case in court. And then when you go to the sheriff to actually ask for them to come out and remove somebody, there's another fee. And I can't remember exactly how much it is, but it's somewhere around $150 or $200 for that. There could be additional expenses depending on whether a landlord hires an attorney or has to store the tenant's property at some storage facility. For a tenant, the process doesn't necessarily cost anything. They don't have to hire a lawyer. However, if they lose the eviction, those costs that the landlord incurs could be put on the tenant.
What does this do to a tenant's record? You mentioned that earlier. How does it scar someone's record and their history if this eviction lands in court?
Right. So if the eviction is filed, it's going to be easily accessible, easily searchable on CCAP, the court's online website. And right now, it's so easy to search for these court records that landlords almost across the board always search to see if a tenant has had an eviction filed against them. Now, that court record does not tell you whether the eviction had any merit or what happened. It just tells you that it was filed and whether it was granted or not. In other words, was the tenant evicted? Now, that filing alone stays on a tenant's record for 2 years. But if the eviction is granted, that stays on the tenant's record for much longer. I think it's 10 years. And so that record is going to haunt the tenant for potentially 10 years to come. And many landlords will not rent to a tenant who has been evicted.
Could that haunt your prospects for employment?
It could potentially. You know, I'm not an employment lawyer, so I'm not sure all of the restrictions that I believe that employers can only hold something against you if it's relevant to the job. Mm-hmm. So I would be surprised if an employer could say you were evicted and therefore you can't work this retail job.
When tenants fight the eviction in court, how successful are they? What do you see?
Well, there's a huge difference in their success depending on whether or not they have an advocate. So it's important to note that 90% of landlords have attorneys when they go to eviction court, and 90% of tenants do not have an attorney. So there's a huge imbalance there. And when what we see, especially through our eviction defense projects that we have in Madison and Milwaukee, what we see is that when lawyers get involved, there's a huge increase in the rate that tenants are able to work something out with their landlord or even potentially win the case and have it dismissed.
Oh, so there could be even some negotiation that would happen if lawyers would be involved.
Absolutely. That's the vast majority of what we do as lawyers is negotiate and come to some sort of agreement. It's rare that we end up having to go to a trial and fight things out. Usually when a lawyer is involved, they can look at the case and tell the tenant, listen, these are all your weaknesses. These are all the reasons you might lose. We think we should work something out. And then they can tell the tenant, what the landlord's offering is a good deal. We should take this. You can stay for 3 more months. You can pay this backlog, but then you need to leave at the end of September.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Chris Donahoe is a supervising attorney and the housing coordinator for Legal Action of Wisconsin. Coming up, we talk with a Milwaukee restaurant owner about why he favors a mandatory mask law. Do you tie on a mask when you go out? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about mask wearing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Public Health Madison and Dane County issued a mask wearing order this week. It takes effect Monday, becoming the first community to issue a mask requirement in Wisconsin. Proposed ordinance in the city of Milwaukee would take similar action, and the Milwaukee Health Department would enforce it. Do you wear a mask when you leave your home? Are you in favor of mask wearing orders, or do you feel that the government has no right to tell you when and where to don a mask? We're at 800-642-1234. Ryan Clancy is county supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County. He's a restaurant owner in the Bayview neighborhood. Ryan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
So walking back here in early June, the county issued a mandatory face mask policy for people who use county facilities. And now some alders in the city want a law mandating masks. Can you tell us about what is on the table with this ordinance?
Absolutely. So the ordinance is relatively simple in its most recent iteration, right? So when you leave your house, you should have a mask with you. When you're within 6 feet of other people, you should be wearing that mask. And any time that you're indoors, you should be wearing that mask as well. There are some exceptions to that, including age. As a father of 5 kids, I can't imagine putting a mask on a 1 or 2 year old. But if your age is 3 and up, the expectation is that you're wearing a mask or trying your best to prevent the spread of COVID-19 to others.
Do you find that this ordinance is pretty straightforward in how you would go about implementing it?
It is. In fact, I'm as a restaurant owner, I'm one of 120, more than 120 now, restaurants in the Milwaukee area that asked for this specifically. It is straightforward. And I think what it does as a restaurant owner is that it provides our staff, our employees, our managers with some cover to do the right thing. So, I mean, we've been asking for this for a long time to have some consistency between places. Because we don't want any of our staff to have to, explain to customers ad nauseum over and over that this is our policy. It really is much easier to say this is the law. And right or wrong, there's a critical mass of people out there who will follow the law and who just aren't masking up voluntarily.
Oh, you say a kind of a blanket city ordinance would be much easier and to follow than, having individual practices at each business or restaurant.
Absolutely. And that's what our restaurants have been asking for. Yeah, the Milwaukee Independent Restaurant Coalition said very clearly, this is what we want. We want citywide action that was addressed to the city of Milwaukee. Because it shouldn't be the place down the road that isn't enforcing a mask, suggestion is packed full of people and the places that are trying to do the right thing that just have outdoor patio dining and are closed entirely are being penalized by the lack of a broad policy.
So what I'm hearing here is consistency is really important. We heard from Paul in Eau Claire, emailed us this morning. Paul says businesses are welcome to make up their mask rules and customers are free to choose where they shop. Paul says they stopped shopping at Menards because of the mask wearing policy. They now go to Ace Hardware. Do you see that as customers decide where they'll shop due to how the establishment treats masks?
Sure, and it really isn't inherently unfair to the restaurants that are trying to do the right thing. So the science is in on this, right? This is no longer a matter of opinion. We know that COVID-19 spreads faster indoors than out, and that it spreads much faster among people who are unmasked to anybody else, whether the person on the receiving end of this pandemic is wearing a mask or not. So it strikes me as really unfair to penalize businesses who are trying not only trying to do the right thing, but are literally in the process of saving lives. The ones that have decided to remain closed or to have limited service should not be going out of business when the rest of the restaurants and bars are, you know, packing themselves to capacity, even in the face of orders to say that they shouldn't.
Let's take a call now. Jill is joining us from Rhinelander this morning. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just calling to comment that wearing a mask, I wish people would quit thinking of it as a personal vendetta against them. It's to be for the common good, to try and get rid and get over this pandemic and to put things back to normal. I mean, I don't like wearing a mask, but I do it.
Jill, thank you for that. Ryan, this is for the greater good.
Absolutely. And it's a relatively small, simple thing. I am also annoyed by masks. With five kids, it's sometimes a chore. But even my 6-year-old understands that there's, a part of being an American, part of being a Milwaukeean or Wisconsinite right now is doing the right thing. But unfortunately, the recommendations that individual places or communities have had are just not working. The data shows that a very small number of people are spreading this virus to many other people. And it's the people without masks. It's the people making, choices that endanger others. We can no longer rely on voluntary compliance to keep people safe. At the news hour, we just pointed out that there were 600 cases and that we're now up to 807 dead. So this is not some abstract choice. This is a matter of life and death. And I'm always going to err on the side of public health and keeping my community safe.
If you're just joining us, we're looking at mask wearing mandates and what is under consideration in the city of Milwaukee. Ryan Clancy is county supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County. He also owns a restaurant and entertainment venue in the city. You can join in. Do you know someone who has become infected with COVID-19? Did they wear a mask when they went out in public? How do you think authorities should enforce mask mandates? We're at 800-642-1234. Ryan, how is your business doing? Your business has food, drinks, laser tag, rock climbing walls. How are you navigating this?
We're closed. I mean, we were one of the first businesses to close. It was before both the state of Wisconsin and the city mandate. And we looked at our community, we looked at our employees and said, we're not willing to endanger you. We're one of the businesses that was lucky enough to get the PPP. So we are hopeful that we can open up on the other side of this, but we're also going to be one of the last places to open. So mask mandate or no, we don't feel comfortable having people in our building. But part of that is that we can't do outdoor dining. We're not set up for anything like that. We're just doing delivery and carry out because the science shows that, delivery and carry out are not a disease vector for COVID-19. There's a wide range of services out there that people need and that people are going to participate in one way or the other. The safest way, science shows, is to wear a mask while doing those.
How has delivery and carry out been for your business?
We're doing 2 or 3% in a typical day of what our normal business is. So we are losing money at a pretty astounding rate, but we're willing to do that. In some ways, we're able to do that because we know that our employees have access to unemployment, to work share, to the $600 a week. So we're grateful for those things and hope to see those continued as well, because at no point should a restaurant owner or any business owner have to choose between private profit and public health. And I think that the more policies we have out there, including this, that can take the onus off of business owners and put it onto, you know, politicians and I think the health experts that we're listening to, the better off we all are.
Let's take another call. Mary is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I do wear a mask when I am required to, but I don't normally in my everyday life. However, my questions are this. There is a caller that stated until we get rid of this pandemic, this virus is with us forever at this point. At what point do the masks become inefficient or just, hey, we have to make a choice between how we live our lives?
Mary, thank you for the call. And I think Mary sees this as a much longer term issue, Ryan.
And it absolutely is. So I know at the beginning of this, we were all hopeful. We were, you know, looking, you know, days or weeks down the road, but we're not anymore. We're looking months and years down the road. And thank you, Mary, for kind of being a kind of doing what you're supposed to do and saying, you know, I do wear a mask when I'm required to. And I think Mary falls into a really large group of people who are looking around and looking at legislators to set the norm and to establish that critical mass of people who are saying, is this the law or not? Because many people will look around and say, is this mask effective or not? There's another group of people who are going to say, is this required of me or not? And these are the people that we're trying to reach with this legislation.
How would this legislation be enforced? How would it roll out?
Sure. And that was a big part of it for me, right? So in 2020, the last thing I want to do is hand the Milwaukee Police Department or the Milwaukee County Sheriff's another tool that they can use to harass people unfairly. So neither the city ordinance nor the bus resolution that passed yesterday would be enforced by law enforcement. So on the city side, enforcement actually happens through the restaurants primarily. So that the city health department, if they find a consistent amount of offenders in a restaurant, and that the restaurant seems to be doing nothing to control that or to let people know about the policy, they would find the restaurant specifically. And again, as a restaurant owner, I'm in favor of that because that provides us cover that lets us do the right thing on a broader scale than what's happening now.
You know, if a restaurant is seeing patrons without masks, would the restaurant have a stash of masks and offer them? Or do they say, hey, get out of my restaurant? How do you navigate that with your customers who you really value?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we do, you know, we value our customers. I think, speaking personally, I value the customers that are trying to do the right thing, keep their communities safe, frankly, more than others. If you're, you know, when we are open, if you're trying to come into my restaurant without a mask, that's not going to happen. We will have masks available. We've had them available for our staff. But a couple of months ago, I think we could have made the case that there's an equity issue here, that not everybody has access to a mask. But just a few days ago, a private company offered to donate, I think, 1 million masks to folks in Milwaukee. The wide availability and cost of masks at this point, I think, does away with that argument pretty well.
We're talking about mask wearing mandates, the proposals on the table. Ryan Clancy is county supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County, a restaurant owner as well. Would a mask policy make you feel safer about going into a bar or restaurant? What are you hearing from family and friends in other states that have mask mandates in place? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Ryan Clancy on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at mask-wearing mandates and movement on this in Wisconsin. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker testified before a congressional committee yesterday calling for a national containment strategy with mask wearing as a key priority.
We need a national masking mandate. We instituted ours in Illinois on May 1st, one of the first in the nation, and it aligns with our most significant downward shifts in our infection rate. It's not too late for the federal government to make an impact.
What do you think about a federal or local mask-wearing mandate? How do you think authorities should enforce it? Join in 800-642-1234. Ryan Clancy is county supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County, and he stays with us. Let's take another call. Now, Kim is joining us from Door County. And Kim, I understand you're a restaurant owner as well.
Yeah, I'm a restaurant owner up in the Egg Harbor area. And just as Ryan, we decided not to open inside at all to protect my work family and my customers. You know, I value my business and my people, and I think this is the way to do it. And unfortunately, we don't have a national mandate. So like Ryan said, we're forced to make these decisions on our own. In Door County tomorrow, our county board is actually meeting to discuss making it mandatory. And I'm really hoping that many businesses in our area call in to support that like I have.
Ryan, do you see that businesses have made a push, have made an impact there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the, you know, the Alders who have proposed this in Milwaukee are listening to their constituents. They're listening to the, you know, the hundreds of restaurants who were begging for this policy, you know, knowing that it'll not only make consistency, but that it'll keep the public safe. And Kim, thank you for keeping your doors closed, for putting, you know, public health in front of private profit. I know how difficult that is to do. And I'm, you know, just hearing the way that you refer to your employees as your work family really speaks volumes there. I know it's a difficult choice, but thank you.
Let's bring in Darlene now in Muskego. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, good morning. My comments are brief. I totally agree with masking up. I think it would benefit everyone. We've seen it work in other countries, and I guess I just don't understand the resistance. I do agree that it's uncomfortable, but it's something we do because we live in a society. So it's something we should all do.
Darlene, thank you. And let's bring in Logan now in Green Bay. Logan, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that it should be made mandatory and violators should be fined to discouraging them from spreading the illness, if not themselves that are. Not only themselves that are at risk, it's the general public. And what is frightening is the numbers that are going up. And then we get some radio talk shows that are encouraging people not to use it. And unfortunately, it has taken a political...
You see it as a political tool. Logan, thank you. And Ryan, I don't know if there's anything you want to add there before we switch gears.
For sure. So yeah, I mean, I think Darlene makes a really good point, right? So months ago, we didn't have a lot of data from other places. Now we do. It is clear that this policy will work based on looking at other states, other countries, other municipalities. We don't have to guess anymore. And you know, to Logan's point, if we knew that it would be enforced fairly and without targeting certain demographics, I think I would be more in favor of law enforcement enforcing this. As it stands, I'm not. I mean, at this point, as a restaurant owner, I know that this will provide us leverage to do the right thing. And I think enforcement from the health department rather than law enforcement makes more sense right now.
Well, let's turn to bus riding now. There's a resolution that bus riders and drivers must wear masks on county-run bus system. What are the details of that proposal?
That's correct. I'm proud to be the author of that. Some time ago, the Milwaukee County mandated masks in its own facilities, but the county buses are kind of a different beast. They're 501c3. So the operators, the passengers have been asking for a long time now for a universal mask policy. And it did pass committee yesterday unanimously with a 5-0 recommendation that the full board on the 23rd pass that as well. The feedback I've gotten on that has been almost entirely positive from both bus drivers and from passengers. And I'm glad we could do something substantial there too.
And when would it go into effect?
As soon as possible. So they're looking at probably August 1st. MCTS, to their credit, has already started piloting, handing out masks to passengers. So that kind of takes care of the equity argument. And just like the city side, nobody's going to be calling a sheriff or anything else when somebody tries to board without a mask. But what we've seen in other municipalities is going from about a 30% voluntary compliance rate to a 90% rate, even in the absence of any, you know, kind of strong-armed enforcement. That's really what we're after here, is that critical mass of people and establishing the social norm that the default should be to put on a mask. not to walk around without one.
And you're seeing, you know, kind of the rules to catch up with what you're seeing out on the streets and in the buses.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, Wisconsin is a little bit behind. There are many states out there that do have broad mask mandates, and they're frankly doing better. They're controlling the spread better than we are.
We're exploring rules around mask wearing. What is on the table in Milwaukee? Ryan Clancy, County Supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County. You can join in with your insights on mask wearing, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Todd now in Sauk City. Hi, Todd.
Hi. I was just calling. I don't have a problem with businesses in general acquiring it. That's on them. That's their right, their freedom. But the thing is, when the public or the government enforces it, that's when it infringes on freedoms. You know, Benjamin Franklin said it best when he said, if you sacrifice freedom for temporary safety, you deserve neither. And basically, that's the stance we all have to have on everything.
So Todd is saying it, you know, this is infringing on personal freedoms with ordinances like this.
Sure, and I have heard that argument before. Frankly, it's not accurate, right? So as a restaurant owner, I can't leave food out on the counter unrefrigerated for a week and then serve it to a patron under the guise of freedom. I also will not let people into my restaurant in the same way. It's not a matter of freedom. My employees at my restaurant don't, you know, for the most part, have options other than, you know, staying home when we don't have a broad mask mandate. And that means that you know, one of my employees could get this through no fault of their own because their neighbor or somebody at a grocery store decides not to mask up in the name of freedom. And then they bring it in and infect everybody else. And that's what we're trying to avoid here. So we're pushing for the freedom to be safe and healthy, rather than the freedom to not do something simple and that is proven effective to keep our neighbors safe.
Do you know the path forward for your business, how long you might stay closed, and when you might know when the right time is to fully reopen?
Based on the briefings that I'm getting as a public official, I think that the situation is much more dire and much more long-term than I think we're talking about in general. I know that we're going to be one of the last places to open. And I know, frankly, that we have the support of our community and of our employees to do that. So our employees are the ones doing delivery and carry out are getting tested every week now. We're actually paying them to go get COVID-19 tests because that's important to us. That should be the standard. But we're financially in a rush to open, but that's overridden by our concern for the community. And we're seeing many restaurants and many business owners making those same decisions, like Kim from Door County, who has decided to stay closed or to have very limited service. But we need things in place to enable that. One of those is a mask policy. The other one is economic policies that help put money into the hands of individuals that they can support small businesses through this.
Are there tough decisions coming at you as a small business owner that you'll have to make? How long can you go like this?
Every day. Yeah. I mean, it's we look around, we look at our you know, dwindling, you know, bank records, and it's dire. And I think we really need support from the community to pull together. The sooner that we have broad compliance on masking, and it's clear that that's not going to come voluntarily, that it has to be a mandate, that the sooner we can get to the other side of this and we can resume business. But we need this in order to have that.
Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Ryan Clancy, County Supervisor for the 4th District of Milwaukee County, also co-owner of a restaurant and entertainment venue in the Bayview neighborhood. Just ahead, we talk with groups of conservative Wisconsin voters, some who want to see President Trump reelect and others who don't. We work through the issues. Are you a conservative voter? How do you feel about November? It's 800-642-1234 to talk. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.